Welcome to the Musings series, audio book readings, reading from Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, published by All Book Books, written by monk Walter E. Harris III. Thanks for listening. Chapter 5 of Photo Albums of the Heart Mind. Chapter 1, Undercurrents. Chapter 2, The Cry of the Heart Mind. Chapter 3, Turning Points of the Heart Mind. Chapter 4, Joy of the Heart Mind. And Chapter 5, Society's Ploys and Plays. First section, Paper from Trees. The world is ripe with amusing absurdities. A paperback book once cost 25 cents, and now a roll of paper towels can go for $1.50. A story, an entertaining diversion, or a heart-mind-changing collection of insights once cost 1/6 of a blank roll of paper. Unless you count the little floral designs, then you're looking at $1.79. A roll of empty sheets, mostly used for wiping up a mess because of lack of paying attention or being too lazy to use a towel. Needless to say, but it's gonna get said, nowadays paperbacks cost around $10 to $20. This traveler once asked an economist about this phenomenon of rising prices, and he said it is due to the fact of more money being created than goods and services. Money doesn't grow on trees, but the paper comes from them. Actually, the Federal Reserve, which despite its name is not part of the government, prints money and loans it to the government banks. So, there is built-in debt from the get-go. The Federal Reserve System was officially created on December 23, 1913. As of this writing, the U.S. Empire's debt is nearly $20 trillion. The idea that the country is one of the wealthiest in the world is an illusion. This traveler managed a little restaurant in the 1990s, and a distinguished elderly man one day said, "Way back when, a roast beef entree was a dime, coffee and dessert another dime," and so on. Now, this traveler remembers the early 1970s when lunch cost $1, two slices of pizza, 25 cents each, a soda, and dessert. And now, you do the math, most everything going up and up. A tragicomedic twisted arrow like the one Steve Martin would put on his head in his early days of stand-up comedy. Going up and up, but it's all a delusion except when scraping by. A pathological boom time, those in charge flashing eerie smiles. Two wide shit-eating grins from the faces of the lifestyles of the too successful at the expense of others and famous. Plus, if you consider government subsidies, offshore tax scams, and toxic remains affecting Mother Earth and all our relations, it is absurd to call those people successful. Older than the trees. Gary Dahl became a millionaire by selling rocks. That's D-A-H-L. Did he do it by making something out of nothing? No, he made nothing out of something. Well, not really, because a rock knows how to stay itself perhaps better than anyone. Some native peoples call rocks the grandfathers, because they've been here a long time, perhaps the longest. Calling them stone nation or stone people is another way to respect them, or individually, rock being, akin to human being. Out of the seemingly dull-looking rock beings come gems and minerals, some used for healing, some for show. In 1975, the advertising executive marketed the grandfathers as pet rocks. There's an element of humor to it, and perhaps some of the ancient wise energy rubbed off on the, quote, owners, unquote, yet the commodification without the true consciousness spoke volumes. In the 21st century, Israel has stone-throwing laws designed to imprison for years unruly Palestinians for fighting back at a country armed to the teeth with U.S. weaponry and a history of racism and mass murder against Palestinians. Wait, wasn't it their Son of God that said, "Let him who is without sin cast the first stone"? And speaking of so-called sins, how does this headline sound? energy company blows up grandfathers, fracturing their limbs and poisoning a mother, sister, waters, and brother, wind. Hydraulic fracturing, known as fracking, does just that, the literal blowing up of rocks, plus the injection of toxic chemicals into Mother Earth. Fracking has also been linked to an increase in earthquakes. So if we reframe the language, reframe the vision, reframe the consciousness, there'd be less destruction. The next section title is from Irving Berlin's song with the same title. I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night. The Teotihuacan pyramid of the sun was constructed circa 200 Common Era, and the pyramid of the moon circa 250 Common Era. This traveler doesn't profess to know any hidden meanings, but it makes cosmological sense that the sun was built first. According to mystical Kabbalah, sexuality and creativity are guided by the moon, which is neither male nor female, nor not male or female. This station of the Tree of Life is a combination of both, and adaptable to each individual, hence another of its symbols, the mirror. The plethora of short-lived relationships and those gone awry are like romantic moonlit nights where the clouds suddenly roll in, or daybreak comes and the lover doesn't look so lovely anymore. The moon mirror ebbs and flows and changes shapes. In mystical Kabbalah, the physical attributes associated with these energies are the groin, sexual organs, and buttocks. Of course, the light of the moon actually comes from the sunlight beings. In mystical Kabbalah, the heart is guided by the sun. So the way this traveler sees it, relationships based on sexuality won't last unless there is also a sun-heart rapport. This is not to say that one can't have pleasurable flings, rather that the annals of failed relationships and marriages are filled with wanting more full moons than are possible. Yet the sun is constant, well, except at night. There's the ahem rub. How does a relationship carry the sun energy when it is not physically visible? You could write Dear Abby, travel to Mexico and ask the pyramids, or ponder the nature of sun and moon, self and other, and the reflections thereof. And throw in the hopper the awareness that the better the sun and moon align within you, the better the experience of any kind of relationship you have. And with so much news of sexual assault, this traveler feels that sexual self-satisfaction needs to be encouraged. And the next section starts with a Zen saying, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. One point being, life goes on and on and on. So whether you become or already are enlightened, or just a jerk, or a criminal in prison, you will have some sort of lifestyle. Do some sort of work that carries you from one day to the next to the next. The saying also alludes to the fact that while the action itself may not change, one's consciousness and way of relating with the action will change. A daily chore becomes an act of reverence and gratitude when one is united with what Taoists call the way. And odds are the water will taste better if it is served by a person who is enlightened. From the land of make-believe comes another storyline. Quote, according to the diary of H.J. Whitley, known as the father of Hollywood, on his honeymoon in 1886, he stood at the top of the hill looking out over the valley. Along came a Chinese man in a wagon carrying wood. The man got out of the wagon and bowed. The Chinese man was asked what he was doing and replied, I haul wood, meaning hauling wood. H.J. Whitley had an epiphany and decided to name his new town Hollywood. Holly would represent England, and wood would represent his Scottish heritage. Whitley had already started over 100 towns across the western United States. Director D.W. Griffith was the first to make a motion picture in Hollywood, his 17-minute short film, In Old California, 1910. End quote. thus was colonized, another way to view the world. Direct seeing replaced with prefabricated images. Backtrack to the future. William Randolph Hearst, the poster boy for the media conglomerates that as of this writing control the bulk of what people see, hear, read, listen to, touch, publish, and get their news from. GE, News Corp, Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, CBS, National Amusements, Comcast, Sony, and Hearst Communications. Newspaper owners Hearst, San Francisco, and Joseph Pulitzer, New York, popularized yellow journalism. Yellow ink was used as part of the sensationalizing, and media war hawked the country into the Spanish-American War, 1898. The mindset of empire was not new, but the burgeoning mainstream media amplified it. In 1941, Frank Luther Mott's book, American Journalism, identified the blueprint for yellow journalism. 1. Scare headlines in huge print, often of minor news. 2. Lavish use of pictures or imaginary drawings. 3. Use of faked interviews, misleading headlines, pseudoscience, and a parade of false learning from so-called experts. Emphasis on full-color Sunday supplements, usually with comic strips. Dramatic sympathy with the underdog against the system, end quote. And to which I'll add, rather than actually changing the system. Eventually, corporate TV news would merge with tabloid journalism, and breaking news became a famous person getting out of an airplane upon arrival at a foreign location. Yawn. The supermarket tabloid grabs attention while you wait online. The lazy mind grabs a bit of news online on the go. The mainstream corporate media has two basic tactics. Sin of omission. You'll rarely ever hear, except in dramatized fashion, about native peoples. And what they claim of others is what they themselves do or want to hide. The supposed Russiagate meddling in presidential election affairs ignored the WikiLeaks news that it was the Democratic Party sabotaging Bernie Sanders' bid. Or a leak, but not a hack. Plus, Republican vote riggings for Donald J. Trump, not to mention voter purging of minorities, according to investigative journalist Greg Palast. When the photos began to move. Hollywood's photo plays, aka moving pictures, began the era of the speeding up of our perceptions via an outer-induced rapid eye movement. Our minds beginning to process a celluloid dream time, confusing the actual world with the screen. Pictures from the actual world projected onto the screen, and subsequently our visual and soon audio-visual consciousness got skewed by this parallel world, this facsimile cinema, this projecting onto others, the others eating it up with eyes bigger than stomachs. Newsreels beginning in 1909. First film, 1910. Federal Reserve money-making scam created 1913 and World War I, 1914. Connection? First informal drive-in movie, 1915 and formerly 1933. 1915, The Birth of a Nation, originally called The Klansman, pro-Ku Klux Klan. The first 12-reel film and first film shown in the White House. First drive-in restaurant, A&W, 1923. Classical Hollywood from 1917, first John Wayne film, The Big Trail, in 1930, propagandizing manifest destiny with the career of the Duke and Company. Now, this is a word, one of those word plays that I mentioned earlier that you'd have sort of have to see it, so I will spell it out, with the career of the Duke and Cowboys, but I have C. O dot W B O Y S, so it's a word play on Duke and Company and Cowboys. With the career of the Duke and Cowboys versus Indians' false narratives. And blacks, always the servants, and Al Jolson, and the ongoing Aunt Jemimification of stereotypes, the images pre-processed to project an image so as to keep the minorities in a two-dimensional box. The dust jacket flap notes to Gore Vidal's Hollywood, a novel of America in the 1920s, allude to the significance of the inception of slick propaganda and its use on the geopolitical stage. Quote, Hollywood, America's other capital, is perfecting the art of image making. America, on the eve of its plummet from isolation and its subsequent rise to world hegemony, end quote. Nowadays, it is a multi-gadget tasking, a grasping in the Instagram dark for Indra's jeweled net, where each jewel reflects all the other jewels like pearls, like stars, like mirrors. The universe all-seeing, the great self always seeing its little selves, the little selves not seeing the great self because the device has become a distraction, the gadgets too often conveying only a flavor of a thing and not the thing itself. Heart-mind control. And it starts off with quotes. If we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, is it not possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing about it? If you can influence the leaders, either with or without their conscious cooperation, you automatically influence the group which they sway. Those who manipulate the unseen mechanism of society can constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. End quote. He called this method, quote, the engineering of consent, end quote. In other words, the use of an engineering approach, that is, action based only on thorough knowledge of the situation and on the application of scientific principles and tried practices to the task of getting people to support ideas and programs, end quote. Edward Louis James Bernays was Sigmund Freud's nephew. As the quotes show, he perfected the dark magic art of public relations propaganda while poking at the open wound of one of Buddha's four noble truths, loosely, suffering arises from attachment to desires. At the beginning of this book is mention of a jinn as the genie in the bottle, or as with engine, the spirit in a machine. The genie speaks through the undercurrents of daily existence. By engineering consent, Bernays and all those that follow his basic method create distractions, manipulations, and false undercurrents based on slick persuasiveness and economic proselytizing for corporate profits. Public relations at the expense of Mother Earth and all the relations. Nowadays, the new agey self-improvement industry is venture capitalisming into dangerous territory with the likes of corporate Buddhist mindfulness training, or a book, The Right Brain Way, Drive Your Brand with the Power of Emotion. For an entertaining and enlightening summary of such manipulations, see Adam Curtis's award-winning 2002 documentary for the BBC, The Century of the Self. Fast forward. Fast forward to Fast Food Nation, a 2001 book by Eric Schlosser conveying the evolution of boy meets grill, of industry meets country, creating a so-called culture on the go. And some more wordplay, those are spelled M-E-A-T-S. Evolution of boy meets grill, or industry meets country. Trolleys literally driven out by a 1936 to 1950 conspiracy of auto, tire, and oil industries, plus federally funded roads patterned after the Autobahn, officially the Bundesautobahn, Federal Automobile Track, originally the Reich Autobahn, an invention of the Third Reich, allowing for military transport if necessary. In Base Nation, David Vine writes of how Pan American Airways reaped the planned benefit of pre, during, and post-World War II foreign infrastructure under the fascist guise of military and commercial purposes. Start with fast food startups, 1950s, and cheap employees morphing Ford's model into the assembly lining of people. Then mix in Hollywood, Disney, advertising, toys with meals, cartoons and TV ads aimed at kids, sprinkle with sports league promotions pledging allegiance, food subsidies, agribusiness, and grain markets slanted for cheap feed products for cattle for fast food. From drive-in to drive-through, ever perfecting the package meal deal, one commodification under God with unliberty milkless milkshakes and freedom fries with that for all on a tight budget. Fast forward to epidemics of obesity and diabetes exported to foreign countries as weapons of mass indigestion and non-denominational huge profits for fast food franchises on U.S. empire military bases. And another book by this writer, Drive Through Theofascism and the Hero's Journey. The medium is a messenger. The media is the big mouthpiece of the pie dividing people into success and failure, have and have not, survivor and victim, getting laid and being isolated. The media's mouth is so big, talking heads with no hearts screaming 24/7 via any outlet they can purchase. Why do some people look to them as a voice of authority? Why do so many people react to it without verifying the truth? The corporate media is a rooster in wolf's clothing with a crack of dawn top story distracting from hearing the all-equal voices of nature, the still, small voice within, the prayers of your ancestors. The good news is that more and more people don't believe the corporate spin doctors. The bad news is that smear campaigns and news feeds are trying to control via social media what news you can access. So you have to do some homework to even come close to the true news, whether from investigative journalists, those who have actually been to the place being reported on and actually interviewed the people, or from in-depth book analysis, or your own reading between the lines. But don't take my word for it. The word corporation comes from Latin corpus, and since the media is a purveyor of state news promoting wars and terror, this traveler calls them the corpserate media. They headline, quote, allege, and, quote, suspect, before they know, shaping opinions on hearsay, engineering consent, and, shamefully, people die or are scarred for life in the wars they promote. The word medium refers to a conveyor, the form through which something else moves. An artist has a medium through which to express. A psychic medium conveys messages, impressions, visions, voices from other than the mundane world, spirit-guided information from friends and loved ones from the other side or from nature, or part of oneself that one has been unable to access. Everyone is a medium in some fashion, a medium of the Creator. But too much power has been given to the media. Theatron number one, the stage. And a quote from Stella Adler. It means the seeing place. It is the place people come to see the truth about life and the social situation. Theatron is the Greek word for theater. Spectators of war, a phrase from Herodotus, seems to indicate where the phrase theater of war derived from. Tragedies teach what each of us is capable of doing if the passions go unchecked. Comedies remind us to forgive our human foibles and laugh at ourselves. The Three Stooges have taught this traveler to think at least twice before making repairs. Spectacles from the fading Roman Empire, known as bread and circuses, aim to distract people from what's truly happening. Some of today's spectacles feature the gratuitous violence of movie theater and TV films, plus wild special effects. The bread has been replaced by the likes of a seemingly substanceless cheese-flavored air-puffed snack. Sporting events and musical concerts are also a kind of theater, and it is worth remembering that advertising where paid actors pitch products is a form of schlock theater. On the darker, though also economically beneficial for some side, the run-up to the invasion and occupation of Iraq was a mainstream media government-approved propagandic video game Hollywood theatrical extravaganza, resulting in chaos, death, birth defects, toxic residue, and other, quote, blockbuster, unquote, actualities. And how often on TV news have you heard someone describing a strangely horrific real-life scene and saying, it was surreal, it was like a movie? Perhaps the best definition of much of what goes on in today's world, as well as what passes for news, comes from France in the late 1940s. Théâtre de l'absurde, or theater of the absurd. Originally influenced by existentialism, today's real-world theater of the absurd can be about virtually anything. Theatron number two, the personas. The ancient Greeks discovered a dividing line between genuine fake, actor, and fake, con artist. Quote, whereas, this is a Greek word, so I'll try to pronounce it, whereas hypocrisis applied to any sort of public performance, including the art of rhetoric, hypocrites was a technical term for a stage actor and was not considered an appropriate role for a public figure. In Athens in the 4th century BCE, for example, the great orator Demosthenes ridiculed his rival Aeschines, who had been a successful actor before taking up politics, as a hypocrites whose skill at impersonating actors on stage made him an untrustworthy politician. End quote. Adding belligerence makes for a perfect storm. And the next quote comes from a recent news article, Why Trump Was Able to Sucker the World on Syria, The Reality Show Presidency Goes to War, by Neil Gabler, G-A-B-L-E-R, that was in April of 2017. And the article has, the affinity between entertainment and warfare is as old as that between demagogues and warfare. War provides great narratives, think of Homer. It provides heroes and villains, it provides action, it provides a deep rooting interest that gets the blood pumping. In short, it does just about all the things that movies do. He, President DJ Trump, is as much a creature of the media as Ronald Reagan was. Frankly, so are we all now. The bond between Reagan and the public was largely a function of our mutual assimilation of the media. Reagan internalized the movies. He erased the line between the cinematic and the real, both psychologically, he often confused movie scenes with scenes from real life, and politically. End quote. Hypocrisy is the law of the fascist landowners. Going along with the show is for sucker audiences. The basic script of recent years hasn't changed, though the character actor does. CIA Bush Sr.'s 1,000 Points of Light. Slick Willie saying he feels your pain while feeling up Monica. G.W. Bush League, an elitist hick barely speaking English. Slick rhetoric talking Harvard Law grad and drone bombing multi-wars Nobel Peace Prizer Army Barracks Obama, that's spelled O-B-O-M-B-A. DJ Twitter, grotesque narcissism wedded to reality TV racist buffoonery. Next section begins with a quote from a song by Marvin Gaye, Mercy, Mercy Me. Woo, ah, mercy, mercy me. Ah, things ain't what they used to be. No, no. On December 7th, 1963, about 2 weeks after President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, home viewers were introduced to the advent of instant replay for CBS's coverage of an Army-Navy football game. After a touchdown, commentator Lindsey Nelson told viewers, quote, ladies and gentlemen, Army did not score again, end quote. The amusingness of that sports TV anecdote is quite seriously counterpointed by what had happened to what was left of the already tainted, quote, American democracy, end quote. That's my quote, not like a quote. In a May 2017 article, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy under President Reagan, Paul Craig Roberts, reported, quote, researchers who spent years studying the evidence have concluded that President Kennedy was assassinated by a conspiracy between the CIA, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and Secret Service because he was a threat to the military security complex, end quote. In the world of TV sports entertainment, what had simply been an exciting few moments became a dose of technological theatrics, and the instant replay became standard fare. But with the 9/11/2001 attacks, the incessant slow-motion replaying of airplanes hitting the Twin Towers, and of the ensuing billowing gray dust became a form of emotional mind control, insidiously pacifying the public so as to eventually justify the global war of terror. After a heated political battle and public outrage, it was decided to actually help the brave first responders with the James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. Many lives were lost and many still struggle with health issues. In an odd, semi-name similarity, quote, one of the most viewed films in history is The Assassination of President Kennedy, a silent color motion picture sequence shot by Private Citizen Abraham Sapruder with a home movie camera, end quote. Sapruder just happened to be on Elm Street in Dealey Plaza on that infamous November day. And the next section is a poem. It's called Year of the Dog, December 2006. And this being 2018 is another Year of the Dog. And the poem has an epigraph quote from Khalil Gibran, and let there be no purpose in friendship save the deepening of the spirit. In the Year of the Dog, the dandelion is still on the endangered list. Salads and wines and simple eyes look for these bright yellow suns. How did a war on weedy flowers begin? How did the bullshit artists commit pesticide in suburbia and then have the nerve to call it a day? In the Year of the Dog, sadly, still side effects, mutated frogs and lawns manicured to the 16th of an inch. A simple, pliant green blade, an urbanite's dream, what the Lakota people call the standing, silent nation. In the Year of the Dog, a heightened time for friendship and loyalty. And there is still time to be my friend, time for the kicking of beach sand and sniffing. 2 days before winter solstice, a dandelion blooms on the lawn. In the Year of the Dog, the dandelions keep rising up into a world of soil and sunfire, a world of air and wood and mica sweet dewdrops. My friends, how we find each other in such uneventful places, how we carry on in spite of such odds, how we reach for the air with homecoming. And the last section of fifth chapter, life is like a film. There's the expression captured it on film, but this traveler has never heard freed it with film, which is what a good film does. The viewer feeling liberated from a burden or having had an insight as to a mystery of life or one's personal journey, the movie screen and amorphous mirror. Some of the magic of a movie is that it can include many art forms in one. A story, visuals, music and sound effects, dialogue, perhaps some poetry or dance, and the unfolding element of the theater known as the denouement. A movie allows for special effects simulating memories, dream states, and altered perceptions. A movie can encapsulate a novel and convey a virtual lifetime in a couple few hours. A documentary can inform and stir people to take action. The intimacy of a movie theater where, in a darkish space with a group of mostly strangers, there is a tacit agreement to be quiet, everyone focusing on the same scene. And that's it for Chapter 5, Society's Ploys and Plays. Chapter 6 is goes into a little different territory, still riffing on the overriding theme of the book of photos and photo albums, but not as much a news or social political commentary. It goes into more of the philosophy of Zen and Tao and Buddhist philosophy. Chapter 6, The Tao of Photography. So thanks for listening. Have a good one.